Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, you're a dog owner. I have a question for you.
I'll do my best.
Do you notice a difference between city dog and country dog?
I do. Country dog, I think, is closer to the livestock. It knows its places outside. It's a little bit more rough and tumble. It's a bit more like Tramp from Lady and the Tramp.
Right.
Whereas the city dog, I think, thinks of itself like people, perhaps a little presumptuously.
I'd say so.
I know that the dog, our dog, every once in a while likes to go into the people bathroom and shit on the floor. And I just think this is the dog thinking, well, this is what our family does.
Oh, God. Well, I don't have that problem, but I'm dog sitting.
Oh,
but I'm dog sitting at my girlfriend's aunt and uncle place, which is right in Niagara in the woods. And we're here because we're also cat sitting. But the dog freaked out barking at a squirrel for like 20 minutes. I'm like, what are you doing? It's a squirrel. And I'm like, you must never see squirrels in the city or something. This dog was going nuts yesterday. I'm like, it's a goddamn squirrel. It doesn't deserve that amount of energy.
For some reason, dogs love squirrels, but 20 minutes is a long time. Do you think it just might be this dog?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. It's Louie. The dog is, this dog is the sort of sucky dog that I could walk on the street without a leash because it doesn't want to be more than a foot from my feet. Like if I move, the dog's like, oh, where are we going? Where are we going? I'm like, I'm not that interesting.
Dogs kind of have a cultural place. Like we think of them as a certain kind of animal, but within that set of characteristics, each individual dog has its own traits. Mm-hmm. And when you hang out with them, you realize they're very individual. And it could be possible that Louie's just, I don't know, like your friend that's difficult.
Well, he's difficult, but also the most user-friendly dog. It doesn't need long walks. And literally, you could have a mountain of kibble or me, and the dog will choose me every time. It's sometimes I'm like, dog, go out and explore, but it doesn't want to go anywhere. Like right now, it's sitting by my feet, and it could go outside.
So maybe Louie seeing the squirrel and freaking out is Louie breaking out a little bit. He got out of his usual routine. He's with new humans. Maybe he's exploring a little bit. He's finding himself.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Like the teenager that decides doesn't want to hang out with mom and dad, but wants to go to the mall to buy Skechers.
That's exactly it, Matthew. This is the grade 8 trip to Quebec City.
Oh, that's an analogy. By the way, I've been pretty good my whole life where I never take what I've been given for granted. And I was never selfish or snobby or spoiled kid, except for really one time. My mom had planned, and think about how long this would take to plan in the late 80s, a 3-week safari at 3 different locations in Africa. This was a trip of a lifetime, but the trip was going on at the same time as the grade 8 trip to Quebec City. And I said to my mom, can I stay home and be with my friends in Quebec City? It's the most angry I've ever seen her at me on my 48 years on this planet.
That's so funny. It would be the equivalent of cooking a kid like a 10-course birthday meal and the kid saying, I just want to go to Harvey's for a special burger.
Yes, exactly. And at the time, I'm like, Mom, calm down. And as I got older, I realized, Matt, you were such an asshole. Such an asshole.
My parents won this is our version of it. My parents won a free trip at a department store to Florida.
Ooh.
And so the family was going down to Florida, but it was right up against music camp, which tells you a little bit about me because I chose music camp. And so they took my Baba, and my Baba apparently ate for 7 straight days. Like she had never been anywhere really before. And the idea of the hotel that had limitless food, apparently there was a plate in each hand for 7 straight days.
The first time you go to an all-you-can-eat restaurant, it's a game changer.
I love taking my family to Mandarin. I don't know how much time you spent at Mandarin.
Much time, very much time.
Oh, okay. So, but what I love most about it is watching my mother-in-law with an enormous plate of shrimp.
Yeah.
And here's why. Because she doesn't even like shrimp. She just knows it's one of the expensive items on the menu.
Does she eat it?
She'll eat 50, 60 shrimp just because they're the expensive things.
I love it. But that is a certain mindset. Absolutely. It's like you feel like you're getting away with something.
It's kind of, you know, she had a great line about Lent once. You know, Catholics celebrate Lent and, well, I guess not celebrate. They practice Lent. 40 yes. days, you're supposed to give up something. And once I asked her, Gina, what are you giving up for Lent? And she said, Bobby, when I little, I have nothing. Now I give up nothing. And I kind of thought, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense. And to put a bow on this, that is a great mindset. And to put a bow on it, kids out there, if you're going to the all-you-can-eat buffet, use the soup bowl when it's time for ice cream. The ice cream bowls at Mandarin, way too small.
That is a really great piece of advice. By the way, quickly, just as we do put a bow on it, yeah. Gina, my mother-in-law, hit a new high yesterday when she yelled at me why I'm not eating while I was eating.
Did the Department of Italian Stereotypes immediately arrive and give her a prize?
She looked at me and said, Bobby, eat. I literally had a bite of food in my hand.
Do you weigh yourself before you visit your in-laws and afterwards? Because there's got to be a spike.
Every day is like your friend's Super Bowl party.
Yeah.
Where you're just trying to eat as much as you can, and then you weigh yourself at the end of the day to see the change.
So it's basically, it's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but with Gabagool there.
Honestly, I won the golden ticket. What can I tell you?
There you go. There you go, Charlie.
All right. All right. So a bunch of things. I think it's going to be a really basketball heavy podcast, if you're okay with that today. I got a lot of basketball stuff.
Starts next week.
Yeah, exactly. It felt timely. And we haven't really done a lot of Raptors talk since we've been back. But let's do a quick Leafs thing, just because I think there's a really interesting... After four games, I think there's an interesting set of questions. So I want to play a game with you called One Good, One Bad in a Question.
Sure.
And you dive into whatever you want, okay? Here's the bad. Not a lot of scoring from the bottom six, and there probably won't be this year. The good, Matthew Nyes. We talked last week about when a young player is doing good, there's a special kind of lift. He hasn't been great, but he feels like he's going to stick, and he's going to be a good player. So that's nice. And then a question. It's been four games so far. Two of them were really fun. Two of them not so much fun. Which set of two is more representative of what to expect for the next 78?
I'm going to eliminate that one because, like the Stone said, I got no expectations to pass through this town again. I'm going to go with the bottom six because here's my question. If the Leafs have a hard time getting depth scoring, how much of that is because of the players? And how much of it is the fact that when you spend all that money on your top four or five guys, can you really expect a bunch of players making a million or less to score? And by the way, Max Domi's obviously got to do more. But if you put Max Domi to the side, the Leafs have to have third and fourth lines with minimum salary players because they're what they're paying for Marner, Matthews, Nylander, and Tavares. So isn't this just sort of a result of the salary cap and COVID flattening it and how much the top players are getting?
For years, Dubas was doing this crazy dance where he had this super heavy top four salary-wise, and he was every year finding new people to plug and play, Zach Hyman out, Michael Bunting in. Yep. There was always just this turnover of new guys, and some would stick and some wouldn't. I don't know that Brad Treliving has that in him. I don't think it's fair to expect him to have done that given how he was brought in. But yeah, and I don't like Dubas was clearly ready to move on from the big four. I mean, he never said that, but it feels very strongly in his that the Monday presser that he was ready to move on from the big four. And I don't think this was necessarily a punishment against any of them. You know, the Tavares deal isn't the best, but he's been a good player. It was more an acknowledgement that we can't be good enough through the top 12 if this is going to be our top four. Maybe I'm putting thoughts in Dubas's head, but as fans, we all saw this and we're ready to move on from the top four. So to your point, Matt, we've been kind of living with this for years that the team across all of its parts is not good enough because the team is so good at its own top end.
Yeah, it's in a lot of ways, it's not meant to be an indictment of the players, but you're asking... you're asking, hey, $800,000 player, why can't you score like a $2.3 million player? And it's like, well, because the Leafs are the only team in the NHL that have three guys making over $10 million. So it's like, you know what? This is the structure of the cap. And the economic reality of the Maple Leafs is to expect consistent depth scoring is a near impossibility.
One of my quick sidebar here, one of my favorite stupid sports broadcaster cliches.
Ooh, there's many.
Yeah, there's this one I really like. When a guy who's pretty good has a really good game, and he says, if he could just do that every night.
I know.
He could just do that every night. Like Gary Trent Jr. goes off for 27 points and hits six of seven from three. And he said, if he could just do that every night. Yeah. If he could do that every night, he'd be Dame Lillard.
The worst part there, Bob, is the word just. Because just makes it seem like it's easy. Oh, I'm just going to the store to get some milk. Oh, I'm just going to be consistently well above average, consistently every night. I just need to do that. It's the word just is the problem in that statement.
We all regress to our mean. Think of Gary Trent Jr. or any of these players like your waist. Mm-hmm. That there are times when you're in really good shape and it tightens up and you go, oh, this is who I am. I'm this person who has 32 size pants. And then 6 months later, well, the 34s come back out.
Oh, yeah. Usually, like, well, right now it's around Halloween. It's the only time where adults are like, it's 10 in the morning. Why can't I have some coffee crisp? It's right there in front of me. I'm going to have some coffee crisp when I'm 48 years old.
You know, Matt, I feel like that's more your reality. Because what I love about this is all of us who have kids, like there's so much candy in the house. You're like, oh, what the hell, right? But you guys make Halloween such a big deal in your house that you are the lovable adults who are like kids.
Yeah.
And take every opportunity to make something special. It's lovely. Then
it is. And then I can also nap with impunity as well. But I don't, you know, I'll die alone. So, you know, hopefully your kids will still love you. Okay.
I want to flip back to the Leafs for a second.
Yes, go.
So, yes, it is part of the roster construction. But then my point about Dubas was he made some really smart decisions within those handcuffs that he gave himself. And I don't think that Treliving did himself any favors with this Ryan Reeves deal because it's expensive and he'll give you nothing. And you wanted a loud room and you wanted fights on the ice and you got it. And you know what you're not going to get? Goals. Because he's making too much money to not play him. And there really is no point to bring in a guy who's the go, go, go inspirational leader of the room and then leave him in the press box. So I don't think they did themselves any favors with this. And Max Domi, it was a guess. I thought Jonas Siegel wrote a really good article about the upcoming roster challenges that they're going to face. And he made a very good point about Domi, which is not that he's not a good player, but that over his career, he does better when there's other good players around him. Mm-hmm. Willie Nylander, you can stick him anywhere and he elevates everybody. You put him on that third line because you want to spread scoring across three lines. That third line just gets better because Willie Nylander makes them better. Max Domi is not that kind of player. No. He can keep up with the good players, and that makes him valuable because he doesn't hold them back. But he's not going to take a David Kampf and suddenly turn him into a 20-goal scorer. So in a weird way, you have to put Domi on that second line, even if he's not doing great, because he's going to do less for you on the third and fourth. And I'm not against Max Domi's signing. I hope it works out. I think it's kind of cute to have another Domi back in town. It could be a really great story. But Tyler Bertuzzi, I expect to find his legs and contribute. Max Domi, I'm not so sure about. And if that's the guy who's supposed to give you scoring depth across your lines or broaden out your attack, that could be problematic.
Yeah, with Domi, I always looked at it two ways. The good, it's like, it was human psychology. It's like, Max, you were a high first round pick. You never really became a star. You made some good money, but you have an opportunity here with a lot of great players around you. So then he would play the best hockey because he realizes at his age in Toronto, dad with a star, lots of stars around him, he was going to overperform and kick ass for that one last contract because it's a 1 year deal. The negative side is, why have you been on so many teams over the last short amount of time? So it was always one. Those were the yin and the yang of Max Domi.
Mitch Marner has the chance and William Nylander. They both have that Jason Kidd thing where they've made a lot of pretty good players, a lot of really good player money. Mm-hmm. They're just good at elevating the players around them. You know, Domi, like, hockey's such a team game. It's hard to say why is one guy always a part of negative situations. But over time, eventually, you have to, like, One of the things I kind of love about hockey is that part of your job is to do well, but a big part of doing well means everybody does well. It's not like he scores 22 points a night, but his team sucks. You just can't really do that. It's the game is too integrated. It's too holistic. It's really hard to be good by yourself. And so kind of by nature, there's an element of if you do well, everyone does well around you. Like Dave Semenko had a ton of points skating with Gretzky. Dave Semenko was a cement mixer out there.
Yes.
But he was just out there with the greatest player in the world. And so it trickles down. This is one of the few times the Republican trickle down actually works. It's like everybody shares in the wealth here. But if the players on your line aren't doing great, it's an indictment on everyone.
Yeah. And Bob, I don't know what you're talking about. From what I've seen, the gap between the rich and the poor has not widened over the years. Trickle-down economy is working perfectly in this utopian society that we're living in.
Yeah, it really has been it's been a doozy of a week, hasn't it?
But it's a real boon for humanity. Anyway.
Anywhoozle. So yeah, I'm with you. I think it's an interesting mix. I think that the construction of the team has left them handcuffed with that bottom six. I also think that you have to make such smart decisions. And Dubas did for a long time. So it kind of papered over the fact that it's untenable.
We talk about it all the time. No general manager in some ways has a higher degree of difficulty than whoever's in charge of the Maple Leafs because of the deals that were given out. Like Tim Stutzel, I was reading a piece by Ian Mendez from The Athletic, said, yeah, I could have probably got more money, but you know, I know that if I leave a million or so off the table off the table, our team has a better chance of winning.
And NFL quarterbacks do this from time to time.
Yeah, quarterbacks
do this. They know that their marquee value is super, super high and they can make the most money. But a lot of those deals get structured in a way that the team still has, you know, and they're smart enough to know, like, you can be a great quarterback, but if you don't have great receivers or a great line or a great tight end, or what good's it going to do you?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, it's funny. This will really tie into some of the NBA stuff we're going to do later. But just a quick sidebar. Don't love Klingberg any more than I did 2 games ago.
I was going through the notes on the loss to the Panthers, and on one of the goals he couldn't clear and had a turnover, and then on the Marner power play goal, a brilliant use of his skate to keep the puck in the zone, and then 12 seconds later Marner scores. So the Klingberg roller coaster continues. The key to Klingberg is Liljegren's got to get better so that Klingberg can just hang out with old man Giordano and, you know, play 9 minutes on 5-on-5.
We saw a little bit of an element of that. You know, Klingberg is going to be our Chris Letang. Not as great, obviously, but I remember Merrick had a great line about Letang, which is he can be in on every goal in a 6-5 game.
Yep. Wow. Jeff Merrick finally said something smart. His Cal Ripken streak is over. Good for you, Jeffy.
The negative Ripken. Let's do Raptors, shall we?
Sure.
Because we're getting ready for a new season, and I've never been so confused as to what to expect from a season. Let me just start off with a really general, really broad question, which is, what do you even expect from this year? What are you looking for? What marks this season for you? This season where everything seems to be the same but different.
I have, for the first time, I have lower expectations than almost everyone around me. For years, I was the one yelling, why is everyone taking the under for the team total for wins? It's 36.5. I'm taking the under. John Hollinger from The Athletic says he loves the over. Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo and Joe House on their podcast. Like, almost everyone I know is much more bullish on the Raptors than I am. And maybe it's just discontent for an offseason of inability to do anything. And maybe it's a concern that in the NBA, usually by the end of the second year, you know who players are. And we better hope that's not the case when it comes to Scottie Barnes. Everything is, so much of it is tied into Scottie Barnes. And he didn't really take much of a leap last year. He didn't. He might have taken a step back, or he just maintained. And stars in the NBA, they take a jump. They usually take it pretty quickly.
So let me play devil's avocado here, because I kind of agree with you, but here's the other point of view. Fred's gone, and that's a hit, but Dennis Schroeder is Okay.
Okay. It's, yeah.
Yeah. He draw. It's a draw. But it's but he's proven himself to be a reasonable NBA point guard. Everybody yeah. else is the same on a team that had 41 wins. And Pascal is a borderline all NBA player. OG Anunoby is back and he's playing for a contract. So, you know, he's going to be motivated and fired up. Scotty yep. Barnes showed greatness, potential for greatness in his first year, kind of died on the second year. But we don't really understand how much of this was just a team that had internal turmoil. Coach that didn't want to be there and walked out in a hat that had his own name on it to a yep. press conference. You know, Masai very openly just saying we're playing selfish, stupid basketball and everybody gets a contract when they go back to playing the right way. And that just might light a fire under everyone's ass. The idea that they're a team in the 40 win area is basically just if they're kind of as good as they were last year, at least. And with Fred gone, there's no guarantee that that's, you know, because that's a big hole, especially in terms of outside shooting. You know, I think it's reasonable, although my feeling tells me sometimes there's just a dark cloud that rolls over a unit. And it feels like there's a dark cloud over this one.
And, you know, but you make good points. There is a path for optimism. Like, to me, the best case scenario, it's not winning the championship. It's not getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's Scotty Barnes is becoming a star. It doesn't have to be a star, but everyone by the end of the year is going, yeah, that guy, by the end of the year, that guy's better than Siakam. And they scare the hell out of a second round opponent in the playoffs. That for me is, I think, a reasonable best case scenario for the Raptors.
For me, the best case is they avoid the play-in game, that they finish somewhere in the top six. Mm-hmm. And if they lose in the first round, so be it. I don't think they're a great team, but they should be at least in the middle of the mix. You open up an important question of Scotty. I want to put a pin in it and then just come back. So much of this to me is, can they just not play stupid basketball? Like, there were so many ugly, bad possessions last year where it looked like there was dithering for 20 seconds and then 4 seconds of, I'll just chuck it up from here. There was so little flow out there, and Coach Darko was brought in to instill flow into the offense, which in theory should activate Scotty Barnes. So if they can be a top six team and look like they're playing basketball as opposed to just playground chuck it up, then that's success for this team. They're going to change the composition at some point, right? Like, they're not going to keep Pascal, Scotty, OG. Like, this is just, they're going to be a different team in 3 years. Can they be pointed in the right direction?
The question is, the issues you have with them offensively, they've had the last couple of years. So is that coaching or is it who they are? And can they internally break out of that? And by the way, that's like one of the hardest things to do. You know, it's like, oh, just be consistent. Oh, just be able to create your own offense. Just be more dangerous in the half court. That's a big ask. And then that all just goes back to Scotty Barnes. You know, for this to happen, because we know who Siakam is. He's a great player. By the way, Bob, how scared, like, there's still no contract offer for Siakam. How much of that is Masai Ujiri is worried about paying superstar money for a star player?
Well, if he's smart, he's worried about it. Mm-hmm. And Pascal is just such a tough case because you can't knock him down too far. I mean, he's a top 20 player in the league, but he's going to make a ton of money. He's getting older, and the team, he doesn't seem to make the team look great around him. And he hasn't been great in the last 5 minutes of games. I think we've all watched him enough to know that there's lots to love about him, but that we don't trust him to be the guy.
Yeah.
OG wants to be seen as better than what he really is. You know, when a crusher becomes a rusher, he soon becomes an usher, as they say. One of the hardest things to do is know who you are and excel in that.
Yeah.
He wants the offense run through them. Him? Great, OG. Hit some threes. Create some shots. Like, he's a wonderful perimeter defender.
Yeah.
And he's an incredible complimentary piece. But if you, like, I'm telling you, he's our George Harrison. Like, you know, if you want more songs on the album, write better ones than McCartney and Lennon. Good luck.
That's a good analogy.
Scotty is the tough one, though. Let me bounce this back to you because I kind of sense where you're going with this, which is maybe you don't trust him. But what does a good year look like for Scotty Barnes?
A good year for Scotty Barnes is you see a guy that by the end of the year has developed one or two other ways to score in the half court where he's comfortable being defended and not necessarily the shot always going in, but where just it looks smooth and it looks like he's got a couple weapons in the arsenal. That to me, and it's not about bringing the ball up the court. He can do that. How's the court vision? How is the ability to make quick decisions? That's kind of what I want to see.
In a way, he's a victim of his environment because they're a bad half court team. And most of what you want to see is accomplished in the half court. So he doesn't have great pieces to work with. It seems like one of the underlying themes of this show is the holistic nature of a good team. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't really have a great half court team around him. And he's not a great half court player. He has nowhere to hide out there. And if you're thinking, I want Scotty to be the guy who can make that situation better, that just might not be his skill set. He might be the kind of player who's great in open court and going downhill, all that stuff, like great and okay in half court. If the team around him can accomplish it, he'll be, his court vision's really good. He'll grow into it. But I don't know if he can be the guy who initiates that very necessary team improvement.
And to that point, but the theme of, just do it every night, being the guy, even just for spurts, not only is that hard, that's rare. That's really rare. We could talk around circles in this. It's an oversimplification. If by the end of the year, Siakam is the same guy that he's been, but Scotty Barnes is clearly just a little bit better than Siakam, that's a great season. But that is an incredible ask out of Scotty Barnes. But that's the cruel nature of the NBA. Can you be one of those guys? Oh, well, get out of here. Well, how many are those of those guys? Oh, there's about 9. Oh, and there's 30 teams. Like, that's the cruel nature of it.
All right, one quick question with the Raptors, because we don't have a ton of time left, and we got a few more things to go through. Are we going to love or hate Grady Dick?
God, I hope we love him. Just, he's different than any other rookie we've seen in this city in, well, maybe forever. And I hope we love him, because if we love him, it means he's doing the thing that the Raptors need, a guy who can hit shots.
Feels like the degree of drop-off in how we see him is really big, because he has that personality. I'm reading about him in a Drake video. And if he's not hitting shots, if you're not hitting shots and you're larger than life, get out of here.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I want to love him. I want him to be one of the most, I want him to be the new Tyler Hero, the story where everybody talks about this guy to the point where he's not really that good, but he was better than we thought. And, that's what I want for us. I want him to be our Tyler Hero.
There's two paths for Grady Dick. By the end of the year, the majority of the fan base is going, keep doing those TikTok videos. Be you. Be your personality. Love it. Or if he's not hitting shots, the same fans, stop doing TikTok and work on your craft, you dumb, not even millennial. I don't know what the hell a 20-year-old is.
I don't know either. I think it's a Gen Z.
I don't know.
There's a lot of terms out there. Yeah. All right, let's do a quick NBA dot, dot, dot. I've only got a few here. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
If the Clippers get James Harden, are they the least likable team in the world with him and Kawhi on it?
Oh, my Lord, yes. James Harden is the least likable athlete in North America beyond guys that have committed real crime. The James Harden thing, at some point, I often wonder, why don't more players come out and just be more public about their discontent for him? How many players lost money, lost a chance for glory, lost wins because they were on a roster with Harden who decided, guys, peace, I'm out of here, I'm gaining weight. I don't understand why more players defer to him all the time because his actions hurt a lot of players.
I kind of like that he gains weight, though. That might just be me.
Yeah, I like that as well. But.
All right, well, now let's go to the next one, which is who's going to have a tougher new team to coach, Nick Nurse or Adrian Griffin?
Oh, it's Nurse. It's Philly, because it's not just the James Harden thing. It's that, what if Joel Embiid gets upset? What if Embiid is like, I want out of here? We're all waiting to see Embiid change his social media profile to no longer have anything to do with the 76ers. Embiid in there's enough sample size on him in the postseason to say your numbers go down. You are leaving us wanting in the postseason.
Well, there's that, but there, I don't know how much you've seen about this Milwaukee assistant coach thing with Terry Stotts leaving the team a week before. Apparently he and Griffin got into it. And then shortly thereafter, Terry split, he's close with Dame. And it seems to have been an internal power struggle. Nobody will say anything, but you're a rookie coach. Your hallmark is defense and a kind of defense that requires buy-in from the team. And you've already very publicly thrown somebody out in a power play. They're either going to really fall in line or they're really going to fall out and you're cooked. Nick Nurse is safe there. Nick Nurse will outlive James Harden. He might have a crappy year, but it doesn't matter. He's going to be that coach in Philly in 3 or 4 years. And if you're a head coach, you're just thinking, am I going to have a job next year? Griffin is on the hot seat. They brought him in to win a title. They brought in Dame Lillard, and he's already fighting with his staff in a very, very public way. And he's a rookie coach. We know Nick Nurse is a great coach, or can be.
Yes. Yep.
We don't know Griffin.
It's a good point. Nick Nurse gets a benefit of the doubt. Griffin doesn't. The interesting thing about Philadelphia, they're the only team in the NBA where if I tell you they miss the playoffs, you can intellectually see how that goes. I could also tell you they win the title. You can intellectually see how that goes. No team has greater variance than the 76ers.
They are such an interesting case. When we talk about trust the process, they originated the concept and ended it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they have the least trustworthy guy in the league in James Harden.
All right. So my final dot, dot, dot here, because I want to talk about Christine Sinclair and food a little bit, is Wemby. How awesome is he? Super awesome or super incredibly awesome?
It depends on what Greg Popovich and the science team of the Spurs allow him to do. You know, is he going to, if they allow him to play 60 plus games and 30 plus minutes, then he'll be super duper awesome. If they still treat him with kid gloves, then he's only awesome.
It is so exciting watching a kid come in like that and show a skill set that I've never seen in my life. The last time I saw something kind of like this was Yao Ming, where someone came in and so physically different. And before him was Shaq. There's just something about, right? Skinny Shaq. I watched the Disney Plus documentary on the Magic when it was Shaq and Penny. And it was Skinny Shaq at his best. Sweet Jesus. Like, that guy was just a force in nature. He was like a tornado and a battering ram at the same time. And there's just something about the big man in basketball. Like, I love Steph Curry. He's the most popular basketball player in the world. It's thrilling and watching him sink shots. But man, there's just something about a big man that's just an unstoppable force of nature that makes basketball so much fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. The point about Wembanyama is rarer, is it, where usually when a rookie comes in, you can't wait to watch them on offense. Or, you know, it's Mutombo, you want to see him on defense. With Wembanyama, I can't wait to see what he does with the ball in his hand or when he's defending a guy.
That's a really great point. That's an amazing point. I am excited to see him block shots, and that is so rare. It's a great point. Okay, yeah. Finally, Christine Sinclair retires from the national team, one of the greatest athletes this country has ever produced, one of the greatest soccer players the world has ever produced. Pick a wine for her retirement meal, and I'll pick a dish.
Okay. Do we know where she's from originally? Is she West Coast?
I don't know. That's a good question. Let me quickly look it up.
Yeah, because, okay, if it's the West Coast, then I'm going to go with somewhere in Soyuz, which is southern British Columbia, a wine region right near the border of in the United States. I'll go with Checkmate Merlot. Big, full-bodied wine, but it's a wine that feels like it's giving your whole mouth a hug.
I love it, Matt. We're having some tech problems, so I'm just going to quickly say Osso Buco. Osso Buco is the artist's prime rib. Veal shanks, braised, but also marrow is a real important part of it. And marrow in the body actually creates your red blood cells. And she was the lifeblood of our sporting world for so long. So Osso Buco.
Bob, that is awesome. Your Osso Buco is better than my Checkmate Merlot, just in case people missed it because of technical issues. I love it. Yeah, we got a little bit of technical issues, but the dog did not bark once at a squirrel. So I'm calling this podcast the win. Yeah. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.